Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I think those remarks were offensive and reprehensible.
That's all the sweat just from my forehead. You should never be sweating this much.
Tony Hayward has done a great job for the company.
The school counseling faculty has decided that
bleeping retarded.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. It ain't
bleeping retarded.
Anyway, 877, I'd use that, you know.
Yeah.
877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. And as I said, we're here every night till 1 on the West Coast, 4 on the East Coast, where we take you through the looking glass. When we go to look for a little bit of this thing called truth, that's where we go. We go extra dimensional. You know, we go extra dimensional, man. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And you can go to our website, which is philhendryshow.com. You can look at live streaming video of the show right now. And as ugly as I am, it's still pretty fascinating, you know, to see how we do the show, to watch how this thing is done, to watch how this thing is executed. When I say executed, I do mean, you know, like through the head. No, to watch how the thing is done and to enjoy it. So go over to philhendryshow.com, sign up for a backstage pass. We begin our podcast on iTunes Monday. That means every day's show, if you're a BSP member, you just go right on over to iTunes and, brother, it's loaded in. It's as good as loaded, if you'll pardon the expression. Also, we have archives. We've got a video archive. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. Check it out. Coming up tonight, a judge blocks part of the Arizona immigration bill and more crazy Mel Gibson audio. Plus, it's natural to be sexually attracted to relatives. We're going to be talking with Father James McQuarters about that here in just a moment. There is one study that says, yes, it is. Also, Mr. James Longdon, who is a father and a husband and a citizen who believes that Big Brother, the Obama Big Brother, has become finally just too intrusive. Steve Bozell will join us as well. 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight tonight on Boston, WTKK 96.9 FM, and in Burlington, Iowa, KCPS 1150 AM. So the story here is from the University of Illinois, and this is a study, as we were saying before the program, a study that you sometimes would expect to see, maybe at a lesser-known university, maybe at a foreign university. I know a lot of these kinds of studies come to us from, by way of, British universities, and I don't mean anything by that, but according to psychologist R. Chris Fraley of the University of Illinois, Biological science supports one's attraction to relatives. Why is that? In a study published in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin, Fraley found that humans are more likely to associate themselves with people who look like them. With us from Belmar Academy in Glendale, California, is Father James McQuarters. And have you read this, Father?
Well, I read part of it, Phil. Part of the study is specifically for professionals in that field. Part of the study was for educators in a general sense. And there was a series of notes and a discussion on this kind of data that was released to educators. And so while I don't claim to be a man of science, I don't have a doctorate in any kind of scientific art. I am an educator, and so to that end, we did see the study, and it's one of many that have come out in the advent of this millennium that are going to make things very, very challenging for us.
All right, now the story goes on. Wired magazine, where this also appeared, explains Fraley's methodology and results. People were shown a series of faces of strangers and asked to rank their sexual attractiveness. Before each of the faces were shown, half of the subjects were subliminally exposed to photographs of their opposite sex parent by flashing the images so quickly that they could that they couldn't be perceived consciously, meaning that these were subliminal. And so when they were then asked to pick a sex partner or someone that was very attractive, they came up with the images that were similar to their parental images.
That's true, yes.
And while rare, some coupled, apparently coupled relatives have come out of the woodwork of late. Is that correct?
Well, there is one couple in Australia. There was a couple by the name of John Deeds and Jenny Deeds. And they were on 60 Minutes not too long ago in a 60 Minutes episode about genetic attraction. And they did admit to having had a Hammer's relationship, sexual relationship, father and daughter. It's a very rapidly changing world.
Well, you know, it is a rapidly changing world, Father. So what I would ask you is, as a spiritual man, as a minister of the faith, as a priest, and I guess it doesn't matter really what religion we're talking about, God's law, how are you coping with this? How do other religions cope with this? How do other men of the cloth, men and women of the cloth, cope with this?
I don't know that we all have one uniform way. I think that we are informed always by the Bible and by the Word of God. And we're informed as well by prayer and reflection. And ultimately, of course, we are informed, those of us who are honest in our pursuit, not only in our pursuit of godly ways and the will of God, but to be in pursuit of the will of God is to accept life and to accept nature as we find it. And so, to that end, it is a challenge to take this information and to counsel, whether it is a student or whether they are adults or members of our adult classes who are making the very first important step in becoming Catholic. I know that studies have recently shown that homosexuality and lesbianism and homosexuality and so forth, more and more we are seeing that this is a normal state of affairs for the human being. It's not an abnormality. It's not a sickness.
That homosexuality, you're saying this as a Catholic priest?
Well, I think we know this as Christians. I think the progressive arm of the Christian faith, for those of us who are, as I said, open to the will of God and open to the nature that God created for all of us, the world that God created for all of us, we see now that homosexuality is a not an illness per se, and not an abnormality per se. And so we have to adapt ourselves to these new findings.
Well, how do you adapt yourself to this latest information about it being normal for, at least according to this, it's only natural to be sexually attracted to family?
Well, I think we do this by way of a great deal of prayer. We ask for our parishioners and for our congregants to pray for us and to help us and to support us as we counsel our young people and counsel people in need of life direction and of remaining in the path of Jesus and staying in the grace of the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit. And so with that prayer and with that support, we can begin to inform the tuition, the educational process, that sexually men and women are different and that some things are not as ill as you might think they are, that some things are natural.
Well, if someone came to you and said, Father, I'm sexually attracted to a family member.
Well, we would be able to take this latest information, the latest information that we've got here, and say that you are in the clear, you're not committing any crime, you're not committing any sin.
All right, so if someone said, I want to have sex with my sister, as almost like that's a standard, that sounds like a joke, doesn't it?
Well, it sounds a little bit like an old joke, yeah.
All right. You'd say you're all right.
I would say that that it's a normal feeling to have. Certainly there's a prescription against extramarital affairs, premarital sex, and so forth. But if it was just someone saying, in the confessional, for instance, you and I were speaking about the confessional not too long ago. If someone said to me that I'm sexually attracted to my mother or to my father, I would say to them that this is no longer an affront to God, that we know now that it's quite possibly a normal state of affairs. and so there would be no penance.
You would not give any penance to anyone who fantasized that way?
No.
And what if they acted out?
Even if they acted out.
But it is immoral for any kind of extramarital sex.
It is immoral. It is considered a sin. But this information is so new. And this series of reports and research is so new that if someone said that they had had sex with a brother or sister or relative, that I would not assign penance because of the newness of this, that they went and they acted out on an instinct that had long been suppressed because we had taught that it was a sin. And it turns out it's not a sin at all, and I imagine you're going to find in the first few months after probation like this.
That people are going to be having sex with family members because they've been holding it in?
Because, yes, absolutely. Because if this is a natural instinct, then a lot of people have been holding it back. And it's not fair for me as a priest to say that you're going to burn or you're going to rot in hell or you're going to go and, you know, you're going to go down into hell and rot there in pain when it's been a natural instinct all along for individuals to want this kind of closeness and intimacy with a family member.
All right, it's a lot to, like I said, it's a lot to process, isn't it?
It is, but it's a job that I've taken willingly because it is a difficult job, and we ask people to pray for us as we counsel people. They're constantly changing the research, and so Rome is no real help because they say, well, homosexuality now is not an illness, and it is normal for you to want to have sex with a family member, a son or a father or something like this. So we're constantly having to adjust.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. I want to ask you one more thing, Father. You say that 877-876-PHIL, we're talking to Father James McQuarters, that if you had a bunch of people coming in to the confessional and saying that I had sex with a family member, that you wouldn't necessarily give them penance.
No, I would not.
Because of the fact that this had been long repressed?
Well, I think that's, yes, it had been long repressed, and we find out that it's not unhealthy. So then I would say, well, then they were acting out an unhealthy instinct, and on some level they're entitled to some acting out in that sense, you know.
All right. 877-876-PHIL. Father James McQuarters is on with us talking about the recent study from the University of Illinois that says it is natural to be sexually attracted to a member of your own family. So therefore, it's not sinful. And therefore, what he, as a Catholic priest and other ministers, have counseled against in the past, they're having to change how they view things. They're now counseling that it's all right, and the same with being homosexual and so forth. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Father James McQuarters on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Show.
877-876-PHIL. On the line with me, Father James McQuarters from Belmar Academy. We're talking about this study from the University of Illinois that essentially says having sex with a relative or being sexually attracted to a relative is a normal thing. Now, this is a psychologist. Do you know this man?
I don't know, Dr. Fraley, I think his name is.
Yeah, Dr. R. Chris Fraley.
But I have read part of the study, as I said, it's part of the study that was intended for a layman. I did not read the study that was a part for those who have medical degrees, but I did read the other part.
All right. He says that because of the familiarity, if people look the same as a family member, then we are more attracted to them. People were shown a series of faces of strangers and asked to rank their sexual attractiveness before each of the faces were shown. Half the subjects were subliminally exposed to photographs of the opposite sex by flashing images so quickly they couldn't process them. The other half of the participants were shown photos of unrelated parents. People who were primed with images of their own mother or their own father were more likely to find the faces in the subsequent photo attractive. So you take that information, Father McQuarters, and you give it to a Catholic priest or you give it to a Protestant minister, and they're counseling someone who's sexually attracted to a family member, and what do you say?
What you say to them, Phil, is that it is a completely normal and natural instinct to have. And you're going to, obviously, you're going to have people who are shocked by that, and they're going to be unsure of themselves, and they'll want you to repeat what you're saying. But you have to say to them, no, this is a perfectly normal and natural thing. And that, just like homosexuality, which for the longest time the church felt was an aberration or a sin against God, if you will, homosexuality, the desire, if you will, to have sex with a member of your family, all of these things have their root in a natural part of the mind and not an unnatural part of the mind. And you're going to have a lot of people that are frightened. You'll be talking to a lot of people that are frightened. Because most people think that this is a horrible sin.
Well, you know, it is perceived to be I don't know whether it's perceived to be a very horrible sin, but it's perceived to be something that is just so scary that people don't even want to consider this. And you're having to change a lot of years of training.
I'm not there to change. What I am there to do is to make people feel better about their instinct. And for a man to say that he is sexually attracted to his own daughter, certainly it's wrong for him to act on that. But it's not abnormal for him to feel that way.
See, that's one that I'll never be able to...
Well, you'll never be able to what?
I'll never be able to accept that. I'll never be able to accept that, that it's normal for a guy to be sexually attracted to his daughter.
Well, then you're not accepting science. And if you don't accept science, you don't accept God, because God is a part of science.
Are you telling me that if I'm not sexually attracted to my own daughter, there's something wrong?
No, I'm not saying that if you're not, there's something wrong. I am saying that if you judge that in another man, if you judge that in another woman who's sexually attracted to her own son, I'm saying that is where you commit the sin.
That's where I commit the sin?
That is where the sin is committed, yes. And I know that it is something that's a little backwards from what we have been accustomed to, but we've got to bring ourselves into the 21st century with the things that we know.
877-876-PHIL. Father James McQuarters talking with us about the new study saying that sexual attraction between relatives is normal, and that he, as a priest, has to take that into consideration. If anybody were to talk to him about that, confess it, he would tell them it's not a sin, it's a normal instinct. You even went so far as to say it's normal for a father to be sexually attracted to a daughter, and vice versa, Father. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Gina in Tampa. Go ahead, Gina.
Yes, but I didn't say to act on it.
No, hello? I know, but you said it was normal. Hi, Gina, go ahead.
Let me ask you a question, sir. Where did you go to seminary school?
I went to St. John's Seminary.
St. John's
Seminary was outside of Dublin, yes. It's in a place called County Meath.
So you went
to Ireland.
You went to school in Dublin, Ireland. What year did you graduate?
Let me ask you, where did you go to school?
To Catholic girls' schools all my life.
Even when you were a woman, you went to a Catholic girls' school?
From kindergarten to 12th grade.
I'm joking.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's not the same as going to become a priest, though, is it?
Well, sir, we're taught more than you are. We're taught more than you are.
Becoming a priest is far, far more involved than being a girl.
As far as Catholicism. So I'm a better spokesman than you are.
Well, excuse me, no, you're not, because this is information that is only relatively weeks old. This is only weeks old, the information Phil and I are talking about. So this is not something that you have studied.
Well, you know what?
It is something that I have to incorporate into the... I've got to incorporate all of this into our ministry and into how we counsel and our outreach with parishioners, regardless of their age. We live in this 21st century, which is a complex place. There's no question. And we can't stay still. You know that Catholics now believe that evolution is in keeping with the Bible and the Word of God. Catholics believe this. There was a time when we did not believe this.
All right, so we know that Catholics adjust their beliefs for contemporary stuff, but to say that it's okay or not a sin to have sex with a relative,
I understand that it's quite an adjustment, but it is a part of the modern literature on human psychology.
Let me ask you a question, sir. If you are backing scripture up, I would like to know what scripture that you are backing this weird belief up. Where is your scripture? Okay, if you are saying that you're a holy man, where do you find this in the Holy Bible?
In the Holy Bible, it simply says that wherever the least of you are, there I am. So that if there's a man who has sexual desire, shoot.
We'll be right back. 877-876-PHIL.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and our website is philhendryshow.com. That is philhendryshow.com. Later on, we have Mr. James Longdon on with us to talk about an incident involving his own family where he says the Obama Big Brother reached literally into his home and intruded upon the very privacy of his own family. We'll find out what he's talking about as we continue to follow this presidency and this administration, this train of political thought. This America, as we head toward the elections in 2012. 877-876-PHIL with me is Father James McQuarters from Belmar Academy. We're talking about the University of Illinois study from Professor Chris Fraley, in which he says that sexual attraction between relatives is normal, and it is based upon the familiarity of facial types. And Father McQuarters, as a Catholic priest, we're asking you, how do you counsel this? Now, you mentioned the Bible before we go to another phone call. That you had, that lady asked a very good question, the last caller.
Yes, until I have a couple of cases, if you want, the Leviticus, of course, tells us that's, if I can find my Leviticus here, that should the raw flesh change and turn white, then one must go to the priest. And what that tells us is the raw flesh is the information, as the bread of the soul, you know, is the word of God. The raw flesh is the information. And if it changes and turns, is empty of me because of the new interpretation of a new way that society looks at things, then you go to the priest. It says, go to the priest for your counseling. And I also mentioned, of course, in Timothy, where Jesus said, where the least of these are, there you will find me. And this is from Timothy, and it tells us very clearly that even if we have the traditional view of an individual who might have a sexual attraction for his own sister or his uncle or what have you, I don't know. That is the least of us. There's no one that we can think of that is lower than someone that would be sexually attracted to their own uncle or their own father or something like this. But Jesus is there, you see. And that's where I come, that's where I fall down. If you were to ask me to draw a line in the sand and say, well, where do you stand, Father McQuarters? I say, well, this is scientific information that we've got to incorporate into our teaching. And I say, I fall down with Jesus. Wherever he is, that's where I am.
Well, Jesus said that, but he didn't say that those people were sin-free.
No, he did not say that. But he is much said. There was an awful lot that Jesus didn't say that we are taught. He did mean that, though, you know. And Mary Magdalene, for instance, is she going to burn in hell? No, she's not. Was she a sinner? Yes, she was. Did she commit sins of the flesh? Yes, she did. But we already know that once Jesus sees Mary Magdalene, that all is well in the world of Mary Magdalene, and that she will be furthermore entrusted with more and more assignments.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's take a phone call here from Jan, listening to us on KTNI in Denver. Go ahead, Jan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I just have a few comments about this little study that has been done, and I just believe that, you know, God didn't mean any of this in the Bible, and I think there's so many people that misinterpret the Bible, and I'm not saying anything bad about Catholic religion or anything like that, but if this is what they're believing or what they're studying or something, I would think that we as human beings could try to make it more so we're helping people look in at different aspects of how adults treat children. You know, we lock up pedophiles. We lock up people that are, you know, have problems with that.
I don't know what the lady's trying to. What are you getting at exactly?
You know.
What are you getting at?
I mean, I
don't understand what you're getting at.
I'm getting at is, you know, these people.
Are you mocking Catholicism? Is this against my religion?
For a reason. Pedophiles are pedophiles. That's people that go and mess with children. Children, they're innocent. They are our innocent people. We as adults and we as pedophiles and we as people like that.
Let's say you as an adult woman, let's forget about children for a moment. I'm talking about adults. If you were sexually attracted to your brother, it's not a sin according to the science that we have now. If you were to come to me and you said to me, Father, I've had feelings of sexual attraction for an uncle or a cousin, and I would not automatically say to you that you have offended God, as I would have in the past, prior to this information being released.
So don't we have anything else to do but study information like that? Don't we have, you know, obligations to our congregation, to our people, to say, hey, you know what, try to walk better in the light of the Lord?
Don't you feel better, though, that you have less restriction? Don't you feel better that, and I'm not saying that's what happened, but if you were to be sexually attracted to an uncle, at least you don't have to feel bad about that.
I wouldn't feel bad about it because I don't think that's right. I don't think that's a human feeling. I think somebody come up with something and they didn't have an, you know, they had too much time.
If you were sexually attracted to your uncle, you wouldn't feel bad, right?
Yes, I'd feel bad. That's not right.
I'm telling you that you don't have to feel bad now. I'm telling you, you don't have to feel bad now.
You want me to go to my priest and say, hey, I've got this problem and I need you to help me with it, and you as another human being can help me with a problem like that?
No, you don't have to. You're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying that you don't have to. You don't have to go to a priest, because if you said, I feel sexually attracted to my cousin, my immediate cousin, now you know it's healthy. It's a healthy feeling.
It's a healthy feeling?
Yes, that's what I've been saying.
Well, I know, Father, but it's a very unusual thing. And especially when you're talking about having sex with your kid.
I'm talking about with an adult son. If this lady had an adult son and she was attracted to him sexually, it's no more abnormal than enjoying a banana as opposed to an apple. And that's the good news. That's the good news that we have for you. That's the good news.
There's no good news to this whole situation because it's wrong. It's wrong. It's immoral. God didn't say anything about it in the Bible, and if you can give me a verse, I'd be happy to read it.
God didn't come right out and say it's okay to have sex with your uncle, but he didn't say it's not. You know, he didn't say don't.
What did he come out and say? What did he come out
say that you could do? What did he say? What did he say?
I don't know. What did he say?
You know.
You tell me what he said.
There is no prohibition. He said, love everyone in Timothy. He said, wherever the lowest of you is, I am, is where I am. Wherever the lowest of you are, or wherever the lowest of you is, I am, that's where I is. And what he meant to say was...
Wherever the least of you.
Wherever the least of you. And what he meant to say was, even those of you that want to have sex with an uncle,
why are our prisons so full of these people? Why do we take them to a judge and put them in prison? Why do we do this sort of thing?
Well, we're not talking about putting people in prison just because they're having sex with an uncle, are we?
No, we're not. We're not doing that. That's what I'm saying. We may be putting people in prison for having incest.
We have fathers have sex with children and they go to prison for it.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you, Jan, having sex with an adult son.
No. All right. Jan, thank you very much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to Carol. We have Carol in Greenville, North Carolina. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes.
Yes, Carol, go ahead.
Yes. Father, my point is, first of all, that's incest, what you're speaking about. And if you're...
Not with an adult uncle.
Never mind, not with an adult. If you're a Catholic priest and you follow... Yes. The rules of Rome and our Holy Father,
that is
incest, there has been no doctrine that has come down to the church with a change, and that would be a big change. And for you to go on radio.
You're talking about what part of the Bible, though, that prohibits
it? Listen
now.
Father.
What the Bible does prohibit is the abuse of children, but it does not prohibit an adult woman such
children?
As yourself having the abuse. What it does not prohibit is an adult woman such as yourself having carnal relations with an adult relative. Carnal relations.
Yes, it does.
I can tell you, no, it does not. Out of wedlock, yes, it does. Premarital, yes, it does. But if you are married to your own brother, it does.
If you're going to talk, then I get
used
to call.
I'm telling you. You're not a priest. You can't tell me. I'm a priest.
Listen, and you're
Wait
not God.
Are you telling me that you know more about it than I do?
Raised. Taught by priest, and my uncle happens to be a priest, and I've been around him. Yes, he is.
Well,
he's a Jesuit.
You said you were raised. B-R-A-I-S-E-D. I don't know what that means.
Raised.
Right.
I was... Now, listen. You may... I'm not going along with your son. Because, for one thing, you understand the English language very well, and then you...
Of course I do.
Pull this joke, and we also happen to have relatives from Ireland, so don't pull that.
It doesn't make any difference where your relatives are from.
I know that
in the Bible there is nothing prohibiting you from having sex with an adult cousin, a third, whatever you'd like, if you are with the sacrament of marriage. You can't point in the Bible to me where it is prohibited by God, or the laws of God, or the Word of God. You cannot point anywhere in the Bible where that's prohibited, because it is not. What we have come to understand, and wrongly it would appear, is that these feelings are unnatural. Now we find the University of Illinois tells us that this is a normal feeling to have.
Now they're finding it after all these years. Isn't that funny?
Of course, this is what science does. Science discovers.
Okay, tell me this. You're a priest, and you're saying you're up on all the latest of the rules.
Yes, I try to be.
Okay, and
I have to live in this world, and the people that my flock has to live in this world as well, and we have to live in a modern world.
Yes, but listen. We don't have to become something else to fit in with how the newest fad is that's going around. Your religion, it's over 2,000 years old.
We have survived it.
And you're just somebody who is in with...
Carol, you don't want to blather. Carol, you don't want to blather.
No, I'm not throwing the blather. I'm telling you.
Well, you're blathering now, and I'm trying to give you the word of God.
You're giving
pedophilia
me no
is
word,
only
God.
Pedophilia. If your son is over 18, it's not pedophilia.
You go home tonight, wherever you live and whatever your name is, and make an act of contrition if you know how to
what
say
it. What makes you think I thought it? I am telling you that if it's your son's over 18, and I don't know why he'd do this, but he's consenting.
Well, Father, you're getting into some areas now that I'm very uncomfortable with, and I don't care whether or not the Bible doesn't prohibit it. Okay? When you're talking about uncle...
All right, well, we can keep it on the uncle if you want. But I'm trying to be very, very strict in my interpretation of this. I've got people bringing me information saying, you know how you thought it was wrong to have sex with your own, you know, with your cousin? And I say, yeah, well, guess what? No, it isn't. You know how you thought it was homosexual is wrong? Well, it isn't. And we have to adjust. And we have to tell people. I know that you were attracted to your uncle, but now it's okay. And last week I thought it was a sin.
Listen,
I have to adjust to these things.
May I say something? Any human being that a person sees, they should love them in the way that God created all of them, and you love the God that's in them. This is not a physical God. This is not a physical love. This is a different kind. It's not the love between a man and a woman.
Have you ever loved your nephew? Of course you do.
I always loved him.
You love your nephew? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what if you got, you know, you started to feel a little something more?
I'm simply saying,
it's cool.
This is a very unseemly conversation.
Oh, Phil, you know, a half hour ago, you were all hot to trot with this.
Well, when you're asking this lady this question if she's in love with her nephew, that's the part that bothers me.
I'm trying to give people the good news of God's word.
The good news of God's word, huh? All right, listen, Carol, you've been very kind and very patient. 877-876-PHIL. The good news of God's word, if you're hot for your nephew...
I'm saying, if you're hot for your nephew, it's nothing you're going to get all wound up about, is all I'm saying. What happened to the lady?
I let her go. We got to take a break.
We got to take a break. Your voice is cracking. Because that's because you're cracking up.
You're cracking up. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Father James McQuarters on the new Word of God.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I am Phil Hendry.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL and our website, philhendryshow.com, where you can watch a live streaming video of our show right now. Father James McQuarters is with us from Belmar Academy. Father, what order of priest are you?
I'm a diocesan priest. Well, I don't have a specific order, but a diocesan priest, which means that I am diocese-wide as a Catholic priest.
All right. And but you're at Belmar there, right?
That's correct. I'm associated mostly with the parish, and with what we do with our men's club and our women's club, and very little counseling at the school, but mostly with our adults.
Okay. When you talk to an adult and just perchance they were to say, I am confessing a sin, I had a sexual relationship with an adult member of my family, you're saying that you'd say to them what?
I guess I'd say to them that's fine. There's nothing to say.
Obviously they would be surprised. Well, they would say, well, Father, isn't that a sin?
Yes, I'm sure they would. I'd say, no, that's not a sin. Not according to the most recent information that we have at the University of Illinois. Now, yes, the church has to get caught up on a great many of these things. That's why I ask other people pray for priests, diocesan priests such as myself and others, that we're able to counsel our adults the ways of the world in a healthy way. But it's not going to say... For instance, lady, I had sex with a nephew, and I feel as if I'd like to continue. I could not, in good conscience, say to them, God looks at your sin and vomits it up from out of his mouth. I could not say it. Say that God is happy for you and set them on their cheerful way. But to the larger point, of course, of whether or not this is a premarital or extramarital affair, that, of course, is one of
That's the sin.
That, of course, is the sin, yes.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Garrett.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Garrett. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I've got a question for the priest. You make a very clear distinction between adult consensual versus a minor, and you keep throwing the number 18 out there as an age. Where is the age of 18 said in the Bible? If you're going to go with the theory, go all the way. Show me how the Bible defines 18 as adult.
Well, the Bible defines children as those which are of innocence and still in their father's house.
But
and so society as that aspect of Jesus' teachings, well, we do render unto Caesar that which belongs to Caesar, and that we use as that age, the 18. So that there is a distinction between child and between man.
But why 18? Why not 17?
Well, why do we have 18? Why do people get married? Why is marriage legal after 18? Why does the church recognize marriage after 18? This is a part of the fusion of religion and the society upon which it is built. Now, I know that you called
to try
choosing... to trip me up, and you're not. You called to try to trip me up. You're not going to do it. So why don't you make your point?
You're choosing to apply a societal standard.
You're in over your head.
Wait a minute, Father.
What do you know he's in over his head? He's talking about age. No. There's no age for marriage, and yet marriage is sanctified by the Bible as well.
You are choosing
unless, of course, this gentleman believes that marriage is all right when you're six.
One sense and not in the other.
I beg your pardon?
You are choosing to apply a societal standard, that of 18 equaling adulthood, and on the other hand,
exactly.
not
just
to apply
as we do
the
with
societal
marriage.
Standard of what incest is.
Just as we do with marriage.
That's fine, but marriage,
you didn't come loaded for bear here, you know. You came with your pop shooter. And,
you are applying a societal standard of 18 years
just as we do with marriage. Just as we do with marriage.
Why not? Why not 17?
I don't.
The Bible doesn't
very
say
good
anything
question.
That I can't.
But then, if you're a Christian, you'd know the answer to that. But we do apply the age of 18. That is the societal standard. Now blow it out your ass. And that's not very Christian of me.
Okay, that's about all I want to hear from you. Okay, that's thanks very much, Father McCord.
Phil Hendry. This is the world famous Bill Hendry Show.
It's awful. They bite you, and it feels like an awful mosquito bite.
I'm not available for use anymore. You can see the well's dried up.
I'll tell you what's happening. All the older men are going for younger women, leaving the women.
Obviously, it's a little bump in the road, I believe, and that,
No, I'm an American. I'm an American and a pro-American all the way.
Yeah. World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about every night here. Truth is our bitch, and we go anywhere to find it, even through the looking glass. James Longdon joins us, a father, a husband, and a Tea Party member from Greensboro, North Carolina, or a man who's sympathetic to the Tea Party, to talk about what the Big Brother government of Obama has done to his family. Elizabeth Hasselbeck has an odd theory on older lesbians. Not so much odd as it's old, I think. Plus, unhealthy state fair food. We were telling you about the really bad places, bad stadiums to eat at, bad ballparks, you know, where the bad food service is got people with, you know, getting the dysentery and all that stuff. We'll tell you about the bad state fair food. I don't know whether it's bad for you in that sense or just puts all the weight on you. We'll find out. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And you can find us online at philhendryshow.com, where right now you can watch a live streaming video of the show, listen to live streaming audio of the show, and also access hours and hours and hours, thousands of hours, years and years of archives from our radio show. Starting on Monday, we've got our iTunes podcast. We have just so much stuff that's going on, but for sure I want you to pay attention. Monday we'll have our podcast, and that means we have not only the current show that we're doing, but we'll have a podcast of some of our classic archive material over at philhendryshow.com. Get a BSP and join us over there. All right, joining me right now is a gentleman named James Longdon. We're going to get him on the line in just a second here, but I want to get people caught up to speed a little bit here on this story. One of the items that we're going to talk about has to do with a 12-year-old girl who called 911 to report her mother's, quote, drunk driving. Now, a terrified 12-year-old girl dialed 911 to report that her mother was drunk as they drove along a New York interstate. Jamie Hicks, age 49, had a blood alcohol level of 0.18. And in most states, 0.08 is the legal limit. So that's over twice the legal limit. When she was picked up by police, according to the New York Daily News, she was driving her daughter and 10-year-old son from their grandparents' home in Connecticut back to their home on Long Island. This story has a lot to do with your complaints, actually, doesn't it, sir, Mr. Longdon, about the Obama administration?
Well, I can't comment on that particular story, Phil, but I will comment on the idea of family. And the idea that family is the last bastion of security between any human being
and the abuses of government, the abuses of power. I've been an American citizen all 49 of my years. I've lived here in Greensboro, North Carolina. I've lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've lived in Philadelphia. I've also spent time in Atlanta, Georgia. I've lived, you could say, in all both north and south, southern parts of the United States. And I've been a good citizen, but I draw the line at this Obama administration and their efforts at federalizing everything. That story you're talking about there of a woman who is turned in by her daughter is a small example of the federalizing of the American family. You never saw this happen 10, 15, 20 years ago. You never saw children informing on their parents. But the Obama administration has brought to this country an element of Big Brother that I think needs to be pointed out to the American people before it's too late. I spend a lot of time, I read a lot, and I do. I like to make comparison between the way things are today and the way things were. And I do a lot of reading, and I do a lot of, you read the book 1984 by George Orwell, or Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. You see what is happening in this society and how it's very similar of what those two authors were writing about.
Would you call yourself a Tea Party member?
I'm sympathetic to the Tea Party. I think their essential message is in line with what I believe in. I believe in less government. I believe in a stronger national security policy. I believe in more states' rights. I believe in lower taxes. So I don't see too much of what the Tea Party is, the Tea Party stands for, that I'd be against.
All right. Now, this story of the girl reporting her mother because her mother was drunk driving. You take exception to this because this is a part of what you say, sort of the federalizing of the family.
Exactly, and to that extent, my own family, where my daughter called the police on me, I was arrested. The state compelled my own daughter to act as a witness against me. The state compelled my own daughter to deliver evidence against me. And when we talk about the family being the last bastion of security against Big Brother in this country, and we talk about the family being the last refuge of a man in this country for Big Brother, when you compel your own child, or when the government compels your own child to give evidence against you in a court of law, that to me is the end of the family.
What did your daughter do?
What my daughter did is gave evidence against me.
No, I know she gave evidence against you. And what was the crime? Or what was the alleged crime?
My daughter witnessed me physically abusing my wife. And I don't for 1 minute excuse it. Not for 1 minute.
Your daughter witnessed you physically abusing your wife how?
I was slapping my wife with my open hand.
Slapping her across the face?
Across the face, yeah, back of the head. And I'm not excusing that for 1 minute. I'm not excusing that for 1 minute. I want to make that very clear to you, Mr. Hendry, and to whoever might be listening to me right now, because I love my wife very much. I do not excuse my behavior toward my wife. But when my daughter called the police, that was my daughter reacting to what is an increasing propagandizing and encroachment against the American family.
Well, don't you think it's a perfectly natural thing for anybody to call the police?
I think it's a perfectly natural thing for anyone to call the police, unless it's your own flesh and blood. I think it might be perfectly natural for your own flesh and blood to call the police. What I don't think is natural, and what I take great exception to, is that the government would use that evidence, would use that testimony or that so-called witness account, even though that individual is a member of your own family. They are compelling the tightest bond there is in society, and that is between family members. They are inserting themselves into that very, very tight bond, and they are compelling one member against the other. Now, I explained that to the police officer that arrested me that morning. I explained it to the police officer that I was in the car with when I was being taken to the station for booking, that what they were doing was a very profoundly anti-American act.
All right, well, I'm going to interrupt you here for a minute, James. Your wife, you were smacking with your hand. All right, I know you, I'm not going to I'm not going to prejudice this by saying what a bad guy you are. I think what you did is bad, but that's beyond, I guess it's beside the point, huh?
That is beside the point. It's a given that that what I did to my wife is wrong. I don't for a minute pretend to excuse it. And I should have gone to jail. I should have gone to jail, but not on the eyewitness testimony of my own family, not by compelling my own daughter to give an eyewitness account or evidence against me.
And well, then how would you have been arrested?
I would have been arrested by the officer observing that my wife had been hit. I had slapped my wife three or four times across the face, the back of the head, and she was bruised. There's no question. I feel very badly for that. I feel very wrong for that. But that was true. She was bruised. And they would have arrested me if I had called that in myself. Now,
I was going to say, who's going to call this in? If your wife calls it in...
My wife would call it in. My daughter would call it in. But I'm saying that the police should not compel my wife to give evidence against me. And indeed, the state cannot do that. But they should not compel any man's family to give evidence against him.
So, in other words, who then would have called this in?
It would have been I would have called it in myself.
Did you?
No, I did not. No, I did not. Which is not to say that I would not call it in. But if this happened last Friday, if I had been involved in this assault on my wife, and I was, and I don't deny it, and I had slapped my wife as I did, and I don't deny that. But I don't recognize the right of the federal government, or the state government, to take a statement from my own family, then it would have to have been me who called it in.
But you did not call it in.
But if you hold on for a minute, it happened on a Friday. We had a whole weekend that I wanted to be allowed to sit I guess you'd call it, get comfortable with the idea, to sit and get used to the idea that I'm going to call myself in, and that was what I was going to do. But I want to be able to sit down and take a deep breath and take a look at my options. What am I going to do? Call my own crime in and say that I did this, and you should send the police out.
Are you confident you would have done that?
I'm very confident I would have done that, yes.
But you weren't going to do it on that Friday.
I was not going to do it on that Friday. And as crazy as this sounds, one of the reasons I didn't do it on that Friday, I promised to take my wife to dinner. Now, I know I had just slapped her, and I know I had just abused her physically. And
do you think it's very likely your wife would have wanted to go to dinner with you?
I think that if I'd made it up to her, if I'd apologized, I'd made it up to her.
She'd want to go to dinner with you.
That is correct, yes.
Did she go to dinner with you that Friday night?
She did not, but I was still not prepared to apologize, but I was also not prepared to call myself in. But the fact is, I got arrested anyway.
That's right. The police did come to your home because your daughter called it in.
That's correct, yes, sir. But you asked me, Mama, do I believe in what the Tea Party believes in? I am sympathetic to the Tea Party. I don't consider myself a member of any political party.
All right, well, hold on for a minute, James, because we're going to take a break. We're talking to James Longden, who has an interesting point of view. He believes that the government should not compel any member of our own family. They shouldn't take a police report from them. They shouldn't allow our own family members to call in a crime against us, because the family shouldn't have to testify. So that when his daughter called the police when she saw him slapping her mother, that got him upset. He thinks the only person that should have called that in was himself. He considers that to be another example of Big Brother, the Obama administration's Big Brother. Although I got to tell you, I don't see what Obama's got to do with it. I mean, if the guy's standing there smacking his wife, if that's what Big Brother is calling the cops on that, then that goes back to just about every president we've ever had. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Do you think the police or the government should take evidence from a member of your family against you? Or is that the Obama Big Brother? 877-876-PHIL. And we'll be back here with James Longden and more on the story of him beating his wife and his daughter, turning him in, on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Yeah!
broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. James Longdon with us. And Mr. Longdon is in Greensboro, North Carolina. You were arrested basically for domestic violence after your daughter called in this report. And you feel that this is unfair. You feel that this is a part of an Obama 1984 style government intrusion.
Well, I'll tell you that Obama, there's no question he's tearing families apart.
I know what your point of view is, but I wanted to ask you, what is different about this than any other president?
Mr. Hendry, to answer that, well, I can answer that question very directly. This is not the first time. It is an unfortunate aspect to my personality, which I have been working with a professional on. But I had been arrested when President Bush was in office. I had punched my wife, and I had pushed her down some steps out on a stoop. But I turned myself in. President Bush did not need to encourage my own daughter to turn me in. President Bush did not need to encourage any member of my family to turn me in. I turned myself in. But with the Obama administration and this civil security force that he had talked about, and my daughter hearing these reports, my daughter goes to the phone and calls the police on her own father, because the Obama administration encourages this kind of government intrusion upon the family. And we will not have the government intrude upon the family. We've got to have government, but we don't have to have government in our lives this way. And this, to me, is the most egregious aspect of this.
You're telling me you got arrested for this when Bush was president. Did you turn yourself in?
I turned myself in. I did not need to have my daughter call the police and say, President Obama just told me to call you.
Isn't that a little unfair, sir? You know that people are calling domestic violence calls into the police all the time without thinking who the president is.
Well, I think they need to start, Mr. Hendry. I think that is my point. I think the point is that this has been politicized, that our families have been politicized. The security of our families has been politicized to the point where I did slap my wife several times across the face, and I'm sorry that I did that. But that my own daughter is now an adjunct of the United States police effort, I found that to be quite shocking.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let me go to a phone call here. Peggy on the line in Charlotte. Let's get Peggy on the line here. Peggy in Charlotte, Charlotte, Tennessee, rather. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with James Longdon. Go ahead, Peggy.
Hi. I just wanted to know, this is his daughter, and she's protecting her mother. What if he would have killed her? Was she still not supposed to do anything? Just, dad?
Why are the police having to take statement from a member of my own family?
Because you were abusing her mother.
But the family is the last unit of security against government interference that we have in this country.
And the family is supposed to protect their family. She was protecting her mother.
I agree with you.
But I'm not her mom.
That's not for you to decide. I'm going to turn myself into the police. I don't need the police
using
my own daughter.
What if you would have killed your wife? What if you would have killed your wife?
I didn't, though.
Would you have turned yourself in then?
Yes, I would have.
Well, I doubt it.
Well,
that's going to beat up on a woman is going to turn himself in, whether he kills her or not.
But I think you missed the point, ma'am, and the point is a very simple one. If we are reduced to using our own members of our own family against us, if the government is using your daughter, your son, your husband even, against you, the government has broken through and intruded into
like
the final
that.
Unit of security that we have
in
this country.
If I did something like that,
and it's none of their business.
If I beat my child, or I was hitting on my husband, or anybody,
I would
expect somebody in my family to take up for him.
So you would expect, in other words, that a member of your family would act as a government informant. And that's exactly what it is. President Obama wants you, and his liberal friends want you.
I'm not for President Obama at all. But I am
yes,
not.
You are. If you talk that way, you love President Obama.
No,
you love him
I do
if
not.
You talk the way
I don't
you talk. Well, then why are you acting as a police agent? Why are you acting as a police agent for President Obama? by ratting out members of your own family.
Why do you think you can beat on your wife?
I didn't say that I can. I didn't. I said it's illegal. I said it's against the law, and I said I'm very sorry for it.
And
I should go to jail.
I guarantee you it wasn't the first time. Your daughter's probably seen it before.
It was not the first time. I did it when President Bush was in office, and I turned myself in.
You claim you turned yourself in.
Yes, I did. I turned myself in. I didn't need to President Bush didn't need to come knocking on my door and ask my daughter to rat me out.
Well, who was going to? Who's going to protect Mama?
I just got done telling you, and the lady, I guess, doesn't, unless you got wax in your ears, I said I turned myself in.
She doesn't have wax in her ears, sir. It's a very...
And again, you're going to kill the lady. Is she still with you?
I turned myself into the police.
Then why did you hit her again? How many times are you going to hit her before you kill her?
Because I've got my reasons for that, and I'm not saying they're good reasons.
No. There is no reason for a man.
What is your reason? What are your reasons? What are your reasons for supporting Obama and his government intrusion into the family? What are your reasons for that?
Oh, I don't. But I don't think that's
intrusion. You most certainly do. You just got done saying you want the police to use my daughter.
I do not think that's intrusion in the family.
That's exactly what you did.
No.
Use my daughter against me? You don't think that's intruding into the family?
If you're beating her mama, yeah.
So now we realize that the lady here, Peggy, believes that the police should be allowed to use a daughter as an informant.
What if mama starts beating on you? Do you want the daughter to stand there?
Against the police. I want my daughter to stand there.
Wait a minute, answer this for me.
The mother, she can stand there, and her mother will report the crime as soon as she's done beating me.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back more with James Long in a moment of the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
She's done beating me, she'll probably drop.
Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show on the line with me from Greensboro, North Carolina, Mr. James Longdon. He is a political conservative who has been blogging about the Obama intrusion into family life, the Obama in police state, as he calls it. We were talking about a 12-year-old girl that had reported her mother for drunk driving. You have had your own daughter call the police after witnessing you striking her mother. And yet you find that to be Obama's way of intruding into the family, a daughter calling the police. You understand?
No, Ms. Henry, you have that wrong. I said.
You understand how people don't get this?
You have that wrong. I did not say that I shouldn't be arrested. I just said I did not want my own daughter calling me.
That is true, sir. But you said that you don't want to be. You don't want your daughter calling the cops. That you'll turn yourself in.
Yes, sir. That is very true. I would turn myself in, as I did when President Bush occupied the White House. I had been guilty of domestic violence against my wife as recently as 2007. And I turned myself into the police. But my daughter calling the police after she sees me, she's seen me strike her mother many times. I'm sorry to say that. I'm sitting there. I'm watching television. My wife is here right now. We're watching television, and we have a very good marriage. And I don't need Barack Obama and his civil defense force or whatever this group of spies he wants to put on the street coming into my bedroom and telling me I'm going to jail because I've taken my clothes off or putting a dressing gown on or turning on the Jay Leno.
Hardly, sir. They're taking you to jail for striking your wife.
They don't know that unless they compel my daughter to say so.
All right, 877-876-PHIL on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're talking with, as I mentioned, Mr. James Longdon. Here is Kevin in Boston. Go ahead, Kevin. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Thanks, Phil. How you doing? Hey, James, buddy, you got some issues, pal. You know, for one thing, you know, how many times do you need to beat up your wife? I mean, it's 8-9 times, and then it's okay for your daughter to call the police? Or
I don't know. You ain't listen too good. You don't listen too good, do you?
I
said she
well
never call up. I call up. She don't call up. I call up. You don't listen too good. I said I'm going to call up. My daughter doesn't call anybody.
Good, buddy. You called
no,
once.
You sound like a typical dummy. You sound like some dummy sitting out in front of your brownstone.
You know what?
I call. She don't call. You understand that?
You're
happily married with what? 20 children, you say?
You know,
I can tell a guy that you don't even understand.
Yourself.
Are you an Obama fan?
Good.
You must be an Obama fan.
You
an Obama fan?
If we had you up in my area, we'd give you a whipping.
That's the most overrated. Boston ain't as tough as they say. Boston ain't not near as tough as they say.
And I feel bad for your wife.
I think you love Obama.
Well, what is this about Obama?
Everybody that did this.
You're telling me that everyone that wants to call the cops is an Obama fan.
Everybody that wants their own daughter to rat them out, yeah. And this stand-up guy from Boston, they're
because
Obama fans.
No
they're big government
you're
fans.
Stop whipping your family. You're a sick individual.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Jared. Jared, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Mr. London. I'm trying to be very sympathetic to the reason behind your hitting of your wife.
Hitting my wife is a good thing. I'm saying that having my daughter call the police is a bad thing.
Okay, that's clear, sir. But my question is, and I'll would like to listen to your response after the question. Is what actually provoked? What was your standard that the violence had provoked you to do
this? There's another guy that don't listen too good. I'm not talking about that.
Well, what is your specific thing then?
I'm talking about my daughter calling the police and the police coming out and taking her statement, giving evidence against her father. You don't have people listen to your program tonight. I'm too smart, are they?
The people are trying to follow you, sir. They're trying to follow what you're saying. But this man wants to know why you're committing this violence against your wife.
That's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, I'm very happy to go to jail for what I did. I'm very happy to turn myself into the police for what I did. I'll turn myself into the police. They don't use my daughter. They don't use my wife. They don't use my son. They don't come into my home and take statements from members of my family against me.
Well, as a person
that's in the Constitution of the United States of America, see,
as a person of the cloth, I mean, the public has to look at you with higher regard to higher standards.
All right, 877-877. I don't know where he got that. 877-876. Phil, Ron, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't either.
Hey, go ahead, Ron.
How's it going? I just want to say that he's missing the whole issue here, and the issue is that you committed a crime. And your family is policing you up by reporting that.
My family is working with the Obama mindset, which is Big Brother. You don't understand what I'm talking about. You know what Big Brother is? That's when the government comes into your house and tells you what to do. They don't have any right to come in and take a...
Yes, they do have the right.
Well, I don't believe they do have the right to come in and take a statement from my daughter.
So you mean to tell me that your daughter is courageous enough to say, Daddy, you're wrong.
Courageous?
For doing what you're
courageous?
Doing.
You call that courageous?
She's
turning in a member of her own family?
Yes. Because you know what? That means that she has heart to tell the truth when you don't want to sit here and admit that you're wrong. And even though you have admitted that you're wrong, you're not willing to sit there and say,
I said
I'm
going to turn myself in. Why is that good enough? Why is it good enough if I turn myself in?
I want to say something, Ron. If you say you're going to turn yourself in, then why didn't you turn yourself in last Friday when your wife was you claimed that your wife had been already smacked around by you,
Well, because my daughter did.
All right, your daughter did. All right, and you say you turned yourself in.
I turned myself in when George Bush was president.
I don't know. Are you telling me you've turned yourself in every time you smacked your wife?
Practically every time, yeah.
So there've been times that you haven't.
There have been times that I haven't. But.
Exactly. I'm glad your daughter called the police.
I'm going to turn myself in for those times.
You're going to turn yourself in for those times.
Yes,
how
sir.
Would you like it if your daughter was getting beaten by her husband because she watched you do it to her mom and then she thinks it's okay? You have to break that intergenerational transfer of bad habits.
I'm going
to
tell her husband. It's none of my business, but hopefully, if I can get on more talk shows, the guy that my daughter's going to marry is, it could be you, for all I know. And I can convince you that you got to turn yourself in if you beat my daughter.
Wait a minute.
Then he would know.
No, hold on. This guy here, this Ron.
Yeah.
He marries your daughter. He beats your daughter. And the only thing you're going to do about it is tell him now, please turn yourself in.
If I'm a conservative, that's the only way I can view this. And this is the thing, Phil. I'm a real conservative. I'm not a play conservative like some of these Glenn Beck conservatives. You know, they don't even know what a conservative is. I am a conservative, which means I keep the government off my back morning, noon, and night, and I don't make any excuses, and I don't tell them they get to be on my back in these certain conditions. They don't get to be on my back at all for any reason whatsoever. And that makes me a conservative. I'm not going to let these liberals like Obama and some of these faux conservatives who are really liberal in a conservative clothing tell me, well, you know, I mean, we believe in less government, but there are times when you've got to let Big Brother into your bedroom. While I'm changing my pants, or I'm flipping on Leno, or I'm changing out of my underwear, and I've slapped my wife, and they come in while I'm putting my underwear on.
So they come in while you're putting your underwear on.
That's still an intrusion. I've slapped my wife, and I'm sorry I slapped my wife. But I walk in while I'm getting a pair of bun huggers on, and they got everyone, including these female police officers, now that you know that they let in.
To me, it doesn't make any difference. You know, and I think that you're using a lot of really very strange reasoning here. Dan, in Buffalo, New York, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Mr. James Longdon. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm in law enforcement, and I have to ask, how was the daughter supposed to stop this harassment or assault on the mother? Was the daughter supposed to overpower you?
What? Why is the daughter
protect
supposed
her mother?
To? Why is the daughter supposed to do? She's not the government. She's not a cop.
The
government is the enemy of every conservative, every American, really.
See, I disagree with that.
You disagree? How is she supposed to stop this assault or harassment on her
she's
mother? Is she supposed to overpower you, or should she call somebody to help
question.
Her?
I just answered your question. She's not supposed to. I turned myself in.
Who's supposed to
call on your program that I missed the other day? They're too swift, aren't they?
I think they're asking logical questions, and you're treating them like they're stupid. And I think that your answers are stupid.
My answers are stupid.
Yeah, when you say that I can slap my wife, nobody in my family can do anything about it. I'll turn myself in because if they turn me in, that's Big Brother.
That is the philosophy of a conservative that's not going to let a liberal government run amok, insert itself into my family, and turn my daughter into an informant.
You know, half my jobs I deal with are domestic assaults. Right? And I go into some of these
That's
jobs,
nice.
and the wife, the husband, the child, they're beaten to a pulp. And a lot of times it's family members calling because they don't know how to control the assault or the violent behavior or the harassment on another loved one in the family.
I know. It's bad. It's real bad. But this
we
is the world
in.
We live in. It's an ugly world. It's dog eat dog. And
it's also how a lot of us
jungle.
Law enforcement get killed ourselves handling domestic.
Well, I mean, I think throwing you guys as agents of the U.S. government, throwing you guys into these volatile situations, I don't think is fair either.
You just don't want any government at all, do you?
The less government, the better. That's what the conservative stands for.
The less government, the better. The point where we don't even have cops that protect us.
Mr. Henry, this country got along for about 50, 60 years without cops. And
yeah, it got along. I don't think it got along. It existed without cops, and we finally had cops because we needed cops. And you're telling me you don't want government even to the point where we don't have police. So that what this gentleman was talking, this officer saying, people beaten half to death and cops can't.
Look, the world is a. Do you remember that song by the group called War? The world is a ghetto. Walking down the street. Starry-eyed, laughing at my feet. You remember that song, The World? Don't you know that it's love? The world is a ghetto. And if you know the world is a ghetto, and what do you say?
One of the reasons I went into law enforcement, one of the main reasons.
You guys talking while I'm singing.
To protect those who felt they could use physical force to dominate another individual. And that's one of the reasons
like
I came onto this job. And you know, and I follow the rules.
You know what, sir? I think you need to go to bed. You're a very hardworking police officer. You sound tired because you're just sort of blah, 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 blah.
All right.
You know?
Yeah.
You're a good man. Go to bed. Go home. Go to bed. I know. You're very, very, you're tired. So, and I'd hate to think you're out there on the street. And
wait a minute. He's making sense to me. The guy that didn't make any sense was you with the world is a ghetto.
That doesn't make sense? I think it does. I think it makes sense to this officer here. Thank you very much, whatever your name is.
Thank you, Dan. I'll say it. Thanks very much, Dan.
That's his name, Dan?
Yes. What? You know what? You sound as if you've got a screw loose.
The track, Phil, accused me of being insane when I'm making these points that the government can't protect you from everything. The government can't protect you from a husband that may be smacking you around and throwing you out of a car, whatever you're doing. I haven't done that. Government can't protect you. And the reason why I brought up war, don't you know that it's hard and... And I forget how the words went. The world is a ghetto, don't you know?
And all right, I've heard you sing the song, and you sound a little off.
You mean I'm off in terms of my...
No, you sound mentally off.
That's a specious argument. That's got nothing to do with anything.
Yes, it does. It has a lot to do with it. Because your argument doesn't make sense, and then blurting out the world is a ghetto by war, you sound off mentally. You sound as if you need a doctor.
Maybe I'm under a lot of pressure, just as that officer. That officer sounded tired, but did I call him crazy? I said he's tired. And
well, I'm calling you. Okay, then you're under a lot of pressure. Hold the line here. 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, talking to Mr. James Longdon about the incident where his daughter called the police when she saw him smacking her mother, his wife, and he said that his daughter was used as an informant by the police and that it's none of their business unless he calls the crime in himself. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the song I was telling you about.
I understand that, sir, but I've got phone calls that I have to get to. And
next time, see, if a woman wants to complain about being beaten, the world is a ghetto, you know. And that, you hear that?
I understand that the world is... I need to have that music turned down because I can't hear myself think, please. Because the world is a ghetto does not mean that people have to sit still in a modern society and be beaten. And not only that, it isn't, I realize, the fact that the woman is being beaten, your wife. It's the fact that no one can call it into the police unless it's you. Otherwise, it's somehow compromising your family and the security of your family. Here is Mike in Boston on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Mike. And Mike's going to make the comment, this is not a liberal conservative issue, which I agree with.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
My question for the gentleman on the other line would be...
Turn the music down, please.
Are you a supporter of George Bush?
Yeah, I would say that George Bush was a far better president than Barack Obama has been, because this is the very heart and soul of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about small government as opposed to big brother.
So then my other question for you would be, if you're a George Bush supporter, that would mean that you're an also supporter of the Patriot Act, which is probably one of the biggest big brother acts that I have ever seen enacted.
Well, that
in
was
the government.
Result of an act of war on the country, you see. So that's
right. Okay,
different.
Yes, I understand that. But it is still being enacted today. And what the Patriot Act does is that gives the government the ability to hold you without your consent, without a trial. They can tap your phone, tap your computer without your consent. And you said you're an educated man.
Right, Mike, but I want to ask you a question. Does it say anything in the Patriot Act that my daughter has to be the one tapping my phone? I don't think so.
But your daughter...
Turn that music down, please. Go ahead, Mike.
But your daughter is not tapping your phone.
My daughter, Yeah, my daughter ain't tapping my phone.
No, your daughter did not turn you in. Your daughter called the police because you were beating her mother. And now this is beside the point that I'm making. The point that I'm making to you is if you're a supporter of the Patriot Act, then that would mean that you're a supporter of Big Brother. Because what the Patriot Act does is it enables Big Brother to have more control over you.
Everybody knows Big Brother is going to make his inroads. What I'm saying is Big Brother don't make his inroads into family. Family is the last secure bastion against Big Brother. That's what everybody knows about family. So when Big Brother comes to my house and says, my daughter's going to turn me in because, all right, I was slapping her mother around. And maybe I slapped her mother. I gave her a couple forehands, I gave her a couple backhands. I'm sorry to do that. I didn't want to do that, but I'd rather turn myself in than have my daughter turned into an agent for the federal, for the Barack Obama thought police.
I don't think you understand what Big Brother is. You said that you read 1984.
I know exactly what Big Brother is. I know exactly what Big Brother is.
Clearly not,
and I also know that Big Brother does not use... I'm not going to let him use my... See, this guy wants me to say something that isn't true, Phil. I know what Big Brother is. Big Brother doesn't get to use my daughter, and that's what he doesn't understand.
Well don't talk to me. Talk to the gentleman.
Like I'm saying, if you have read 1984 like you claim you have had, then you should know what Big Brother is. And what Big Brother is...
I know what Big Brother is, man.
Okay.
I know what Big Brother is.
And what Big Brother is Big Brother government watching you and have the ability to tap your phone, tap your internet, and know what you're doing. It has nothing to do with your daughter calling in because you committed a crime.
If that Big Brother uses my daughter, then it does have something to do with my daughter. And Big Brother's using my daughter, but calling in the police... brutality and everything, or whatever it was.
If you support the Patriot Act, then you support Big Brother.
No, the Patriot Act doesn't say anything about using my daughter. Man, how many times have I got to explain that to you? God. Walking down the street.
Will you shut that off, please? Shut it off, will you, bud?
Yeah, better not. Wait a minute, Phil. Just hold on for a minute. It is... walking down the street, soggy
thank you.
I finally found it.
What a mental case. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And we'll be coming back with other news and views here, where we say truth is our bitch. Mel Gibson leaves another crazy phone mail. We'll play him.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
See, you can see I'm not available for use anymore. You can see the well is dried up and you just take off.
I'll tell you what's happening. All the older men are going for younger women, leaving the women with no one.
Disloyal is a weak.
Bed bugs are a terrible situation.
The surge is not working.
Famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we'll take you anywhere to find that, even through the looking glass, as we do each and every night here. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Go to our website, philhendryshow.com. Tonight's show you're listening to right now will be available for download tomorrow. You can download it right onto your iPod if you missed it. If you got to go to bed early, thank you, Bud. Bud Dickman with me and Robert Leonard. If you got to go to bed early, then you can...
go to bed early, next day you go over and get it.
Next day you go over to the website and get it, exactly. And then starting on Monday, we begin our podcast so that each and every show is available to our backstage pass members by way of iTunes. And for those of you... that may not be subscribers, you can listen to some archival podcasts that we're going to place on the on iTunes every so often as well. So we want you to get at least a good feel, a good sampling of the show if you're new to the show. And if you are a fan, go over and be a part of the family at philhendryshow.com. So Mel Gibson is a mental case. This guy gets so tiring. Listening to him becomes fatiguing. He is so full of rage And even though, as I've said often, that I understand this guy's anger, I hope you got it out of your system there, brother. It turns out that all of these phone calls that we've played for you occurred over the course of just one day. This was just him calling back, him telling her to pick up, him leaving messages, him getting into it on the phone with her. Mel Gibson called Oksana Grigoryeva 30 times. 30 times after she left him the night of February the 18th, according to RadarOnline.com. 8 of the, quote, terrorizing calls, end quote, resulted in insane voicemails with phrases such as effing disloyal and effing weak and such an effing slut and lowlife slut peppered throughout. In one two-minute voicemail, he drops the F-bomb 23 times. A source familiar with the case told Radar Online that Mel called Oksana repeatedly between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. with the goal of keeping her up all night. Just making sure you're awake if you're trying to sleep because I'm awake and you deserve to be, he said in a voicemail, and don't ever sleep again. Don't sleep as long as I don't sleep. The day began peacefully enough with a placenta ceremony outside of Mel's Malibu mansion, according to TMZ. What the hell is that?
Is that like afterbirth?
I don't know. What does that mean? Mel and Oksana had buried their baby daughter's placenta in the backyard and were watching as the gardener planted a tree in Lucia's honor. What the hell is that?
Yeah, I guess a lot of movie stars plant afterbirth.
A lot of movie stars plant afterbirth?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, for crying out loud. In any event, so they planted the afterbirth. Oksana reportedly smiled at the gardener, sending Mel into a jealous rage, and things went downhill from there? You know, I just find the whole thing, of course I like listening to it, and we've got a bunch of other, you know, tapes to play for you here. But the whole thing becomes rather, you know, you realize you're eavesdropping in on a situation that's very sad and it's very volatile. And we've all been there in one way or another, or we've heard of people who've been there. And it's not anything that's very pretty. And it's a lot of stuff that you would rather take back if you heard it again. And you wouldn't want to be heard publicly doing it and so on and so forth. I just hasten to add. All right. Here are about two short voicemails that Gibson left for Oksana Grigoryeva that we've sort of just edited together.
I called. Just answer the phone.
God, what a weird ass, man. What a weird ass. Listen to this again. I don't want to hear it again. All right, here he is. In this voicemail, Gibson claims to know her, quote, M.O.
See, you can see I'm not available for use anymore. You can see the well's dried up, and you just take off. You just leave. You just take off because I'm finished for you, right? Because I can't give anymore, right, to your personal cause. You. I can't do it anymore. So you're out of here. Rat leaving the sinking ship. That's your M.O., isn't it, baby? That's your M.O. I will believe that, because it seems to be the truth.
Click. But he called back. In this call, Gibson leaves another voicemail with a series of F-bombs.
Disloyal, a weak, blind, thankless, such a slut. Don't ever sleep again. Don't sleep as long as I don't sleep. Don't sleep. Get sick. Me up. You have me up. You have me up. You me up. Did nothing but help you, and you on me like a low-life slut, which is now what I'm convinced you are. I'm angry at you for the wasted time. I'm angry at you for the waste of my time. You, the ordinary.
I don't know what happened. He says something in there about the, of course, that call was worthless. It was just a lot of FFFFFFFF, which would have been fun to hear. If we play that next to the Tommy Lasorda saying, I'm the manager of the effing team. Nonetheless, I don't know what happened when he said it. I thought the very key thing there was that you're a rat sinking, leaving a sinking ship. So there must be some money problems going on. And that's a tough one to hear because this cat made a lot of bread. I think he got a. Jason and I were trying to do the math on the Passion of the Christ, which was $800 million. That's what we heard his piece of that was. But then, you know, we could be wrong. I don't know. And what kind of financial problems he has, I have no idea. But when I'm thinking, listen to that, she said to him this and this, and he said, you know, I don't really have the money for that, or we don't really have the money for that, or, you know, we're not going to be able to do it. And they got into an argument. He probably perceived that she was making fun of him, and out she goes. But that's a cat that obviously needs to have some pills put into his, you know, cereal in the morning. And he'll be fine, Mel. Because like I said, this is not an unusual thing. There's a lot of guys that have had that kind of anger. I understand it. I don't excuse it. I don't think it's pretty. I don't think it's nice. I don't think it's right. But it exists. And it's about a guy who feels like he's been, you know, cheated, taken advantage of. That's not sadness there. That's not a guy whose heart is breaking. That's not a guy whose heart is breaking. That's a guy who's pissed off. He feels like he's losing a lot, and he's going to lose a lot more with this chick in his life because she's about to hit him with God knows what kind of financial demands. And he can't, you know, he can't take that because he's already giving half to his ex, Robin, and I'm sure that leaves him with a nice piece of change. I mean, look at, even if he was giving half to his ex, Robin, and she was getting $400 million of that $800, that leaves a significant amount for Oksana, doesn't it? But maybe Gibson isn't that kind of guy. I don't know. But there you go. That's the latest in the Mel Gibson saga.
What if he winds up, I was just thinking about, what if he winds up like killing himself or something? Yeah, what if he jump off a building or something?
If Mel Gibson were to commit suicide, that would be the bitter end, man. I mean, that would probably be logical. I don't know.
But if he commits suicide, that'd be make a lot of people feel better, I'll tell you that much.
Would it really, huh? Well,
get out. I mean, you know, he sounds like he's cracking up. Yeah, he doesn't sound like he's got both oar in the water. He sounds like he's all in a heap.
Well, maybe he is cracking up. Like I said, that guy needs some pills, man. Some people need to give him pills.
Well, what kind?
I don't know what kind. He does. He sounds like a guy that could easily snap. He could beat the crap out of somebody or waste himself or something. I don't know. What kind? He's obviously depressed. 877-876-PHIL. Elizabeth Hasselbeck from The View has a theory as to why older women go lesbian, plus unhealthy state fair food. 877-876-PHIL. This is like state fair time. I don't know if you go to the state fair. I've only been to two or three. I've been to three state fairs in my entire life. And
what do you think?
It was, you know, it's fine. It's not my thing. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
You all like win a blue ribbon?
Phil Hendry Show.
Did I win a blue ribbon? No, I didn't win it. What is that supposed to mean?
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And we do have this one added extra little story here from Radar Online. Leonardo DiCaprio is withdrawing from a Mel Gibson-directed flick about Vikings in the wake of the domestic abuse scandal, according to the website. And this is an exclusive. Not a chance, said a source close to the Inception star when asked if he was still planning to star in Gibson's next project. Not a chance. The decision is a major setback for the Oscar-winning actor-director who is facing allegations of domestic abuse and child endangerment. It also lends support to critics who are suggesting Mel won't be able to recover from the Oksana Grigoryeva scandal. He'll recover. Don't worry about it. Oksana, it's not so much that, it's the whole N-word thing, man. That's the thing that he could have beaten her to death. I'm kidding. No, he couldn't have.
I bet you could have, though. No way, man. I bet you.
No, he's not going to. Oksana, age 40, has accused Gibson, 54, of punching her in the face twice as she held their infant daughter, Lucia, during a domestic dispute at his Malibu mansion in January. After allegedly hitting Oksana on the head and mouth, she has claimed Mel then choked her. Detectives from the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department Detective Division are investigating the allegation, along with Mel's claim that Oksana tried to extort him with threats of scandal. Mel was interviewed on Sunday but refused to answer questions about the incident, citing his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. This past Sunday? Really? Mel's profane-laced rants, recorded by Oksana and obtained by Radar Online, are laced with racial slurs, including the N-word and demands for repeated sexual favors. The Viking film was to be DiCaprio's first picture with Mel Gibson. A source close to DiCaprio said the star, who is currently basking in the release of his wildly acclaimed box office-topping movie Inception, did not want to risk his reputation with being associated with Mel Gibson. Boy, that's good of you there, Leonardo. Well, I guess I can't blame the guy.
Well, what's going to happen to the guy? Yeah, I was going to say, what? So he's in a movie with a guy. What does that mean? Like he's in favor of beating up ladies or something?
Well, no, it's not that. It's the N-word thing.
Yeah, you know, I'm black. I mean, I get it, you know. You know, I know he probably don't like black people, but then he'd been in a movie with black people. I think he just said what he said, you know.
Well, all right, you said that. Probably the people that got the bigger problem with Mel Gibson aren't black people, it's white people.
I believe that.
So, in other words, you think he's getting a bad deal?
I'm not saying he's getting a bad deal, but I think if you're going to make a movie, and Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to do the movie with him, why? Because they use the N-word, or because he don't think it's good, you know?
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio, he's a baby. He's being a baby about it. He ought to do the movie, could be a baby.
What do you mean being a baby about it? He's probably getting some career advice. They said, look, distance yourself from this guy. And he said, I guess I should, because, you know, the N-word this, and he beat the woman up that, and you can listen what a psycho this guy is. It's probably just not cool. I don't know. If the guy was his friend, I would probably say, geez, why don't you stick with your friend? But maybe he doesn't know this guy from Adam. You know what I'm saying?
Well, are you saying if he's his friend, he ought to do it?
I'm saying if that was a friend of mine, if that Mel Gibson was a friend of mine, he asked me to be in his movie, I'd be in his movie, yeah.
Oh, my God, man. Everybody thinks you want to be the baby. Yep.
No, they wouldn't think that. They wouldn't, that I want, because I want to be in a movie with a guy that smacked a lady holding a kid, that I want to beat a baby up.
That they may think that.
Oh, well, then they're idiots. Anyway, Leo has earned the right to pick. Oh, who is this ass that was talking for Leonardo DiCaprio? Sounds like a real jackball. Or in the words of Arlie Ermey that I heard the other day in that commercial, a real jackwagon.
I heard that, yeah.
Anyway, according to this source that Radar Online was talking to, he said, quote, Leo has earned the right to pick and choose who he works with, and Mel Gibson is not one of them, the source said, while drinking on Radar Online's tab. The as-yet-untitled project is being produced by Graham King and Mel's Icon Pictures. Variety, the trade publication previously reported DiCaprio had long been fascinated by Viking culture. Yeah, I'll bet he has been. And the...
Well, what does that mean?
Never mind. And
oh, you're trying to say... Oh, okay. I know what you're saying.
No, you don't know what I'm saying. Forget it. And anyway, he's long been fascinated by Viking culture and was supposed to play a Viking in a storyline that will be as unsparing as Mel's other period directing efforts, Braveheart, The Passion of the Christ, and Apocalypto. So what does it show? A lot of Viking rape scenes?
Probably.
Great. Before DiCaprio's withdrawal, shooting was slated to begin in the fall of 2010. Comment is being sought from DiCaprio, which, of course, you will never get as long as you live, Radar Online. So there you go. Now, I wanted to tell you about Elizabeth Hasselbeck, but I'm having a difficult time finding out. I have the story. Believe me, I've got the story, but I don't want to keep fumbling for it. Oh, here we have. Well, we can do that, but there's also the state fair thing that I want to let you guys know about.
Well, I got the deep-fried Snicker bars, all I was worried about. I mean, other than that, I don't stay away from anything.
Yeah, that's the only thing you're worried about?
Man, you got to worry about something. That food's bad, you know.
And you know what, bud? You can make fun of how fat I am, man, but you ain't exactly slim pack. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I'm saying stay away from the Snicker.
The deep-fried Snickers bar, man, you got to have to stay away from a hell of a lot more than that. Anyway, The View host Elizabeth Hasselbeck's lesbian theory, older women just couldn't get a man. Well, there you go. Now, that Ms. Hasselbeck, as respected as you are, ma'am, and I would never want to tell you that you don't know your own mind, but that theory about older women go lesbian because they can't get men anymore because the men go after younger women, that's about, probably a few thousand years old. And it ain't any truer today than it was back when the Pharaoh was kicking it around for laughs. But anyway, Elizabeth Hasselbeck thinks a lot of older lesbians would have turned out straight if they could only land a man. How does she know that? Well, we don't want to say, but it has something to do with her tennis club membership. Now, on The View, Elizabeth Hasselbeck offers a theory on why older women are turning lesbian.
Tell you what's happening. All the older men are going for younger women, leaving the women with no one.
Oh.
That's why they're suddenly sleeping with women? That's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Well,
I don't mean that you're...
So there's a rise, though.
You're searching for someone
rude,
of people-like level intelligence.
Then what does that say about me?
If the men are evacuating for these younger women...
As soon as you go to get another woman, we'll know what about you. you act like women are in jail. We're not in jail.
You're searching for a companion that understands you. And if all the men who are, say you had, were in heterosexual relationships, you're looking for that. But the men who are of your age have had similar experience. They're chasing a little
lesbian. Being gay is not just, you know, holding hands and walking through the tulips.
Are you gay?
You blew it.
Come on, Hasselbeck. You're hassling me. Are you listening to this woman? And they're all... That was pretty funny. I like Behar's line about, you know, we're not in jail.
Tell you what's happening. All the older men are going for younger women, leaving
the women.
Yeah, she's gay. You know, Elizabeth... Anyway, Elizabeth Hasselbeck there on The View. She's always a lot of fun. Those gals are always just... You remember when they... I was just thinking about this the other day. Do you remember the show that...
The one was for guys.
Yeah, the one for guys. What was it called?
Called The Other Side, and it sucked. Man, it sucked more chimpanzee. Man.
It was lousy, man. What happened was, is when this show came out, The View, with these guys, and I forget, it's been so long, I forget who was the original cast.
He had Elizabeth Bet.
They didn't have Elizabeth Hasselbeck, man. She was like on, wasn't she on Survivor or something?
Yeah.
They had... What's her face? Elizabeth, or what's her name? Barbara Walters, and a bunch of other people I forget.
They had a lot of fat blacks.
What do you mean they had fat blacks, man?
Well, you know, they had a lot of fat blacks.
What, they had large black, what do you mean fat blacks? Fat black women?
Yeah, man, you know, you're racist, man. Everybody knows that.
No, I just said.
In any event, when the show came on, they tried to do a man's version of it. I'll never forget. It was called The Other Side. God, was it lousy. It was the lousiest thing you ever saw in your life. It basically was a man's show. Well, it wasn't even a man's show. It was nothing that any man would watch because it was four men. One of them was Dick Clark, and Danny Bonaducci was another. I ain't saying that the panel's bad, but the crap that they talked about had nothing to do with anything. And then you realized, wait a minute, there already is a male version of The View. It's called the Fox NFL Report.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That's what the male version of The View is. It's Sunday on Fox with the football and on CBS, everything else. It's called SportsCenter, in other words. All right, State Fair Foods and the State Fair Food Hall of Shame. Just how funky does it get, man? Just how bad does it get? As you know, we talked with you last night about where the ballparks were the worst food. Now, this is some real badass stuff here from the State Fair, man. The stuff that, well, you can eat it because it tastes good, but it is definite heart attack country. Coming up next year on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Best movie bar.
Phil Hendry.
Do you knock it off with a Snicker bar?
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And it's time now for our food segment here. Yes, our food segment. And the reason why I'm calling it the food segment is because these are actually stories having to do with things you consume. Now, one of the stories having to do with the State Fair food is actually not that bad. They call it the State Fair Food Hall of Shame. But it's not like, as I mentioned last night, the funky places, the ballparks with the bad food service. That I'm not talking about, you know, getting dysentery. This is just food that's going to put all kinds of fat on your ass. How about that? And if you think that's fun, if you think that's a kick and a half, if you think that's the way to live life, then you will not want to miss our segment on how to get your fat ass out to the State Fair to, you know, suck down some more Spam curds. Spam curds?
Man, that sounds good. There's no way that don't sound good.
Are you kidding me?
I don't even know what that is.
You don't want to know what that is. But first, this just in, New York's crappiest cup of coffee is also its most expensive. Now, this, what I'm about to tell you, is absolutely true, although it is written in a rather juvenile fashion by the New York Daily News, naturally. Because why? Well, because this is coffee that is made from coffee beans that have been swallowed by a civet, which is a kind of a cat, a kind of a wildcat. And then they pick through the feces of the civet, and they pull out the coffee beans because the stomach acid of the civet makes a very smooth brew, and they make a cup of coffee out of coffee beans that a cat crapped.
That's pretty funny if you think about it for a while.
Yeah, well, you just keep thinking about that, bud.
Yeah, keep thinking, man.
What are you talking about? You don't think that's funny?
Not really, no. I don't,
Can the cat crap out a coffee bean? Can I have a crap bean? Are you kidding me?
Can I have a what?
What do you call it?
If the cat crapped out the... What do you call it? You call it a crap bean, right?
Not a crap bean. I didn't call it anything. It's called... what it's actually called is a Kopi Luwak. And it's a $30 to $65 cup of coffee. It's made from beans collected from the droppings of a small cat-like mammal called a civet. The Java, often called cat poo coffee. Oh, to hell, it's often called cat poo coffee. Where do they call it that? In Indonesia?
You probably don't know what that means.
Or whatever Indonesian is for cat poo. It isn't everyone's cup of tea and was nearly banned in Indonesia this month for being unsanitary. Nearly, but not quite. Some New Yorkers, though, are saying bottoms up. Because even though they may be banning it in a place called Indonesia because it's unsanitary, that ain't stopping New York. You know, the Indonesians think this is unsanitary. Is that right? Yeah. Well, it's perfectly legal in New York. Oh, yeah. Some New Yorkers, though, are saying bottoms up to the strange brew. At coffee shops like Puerto Rico in the West Village, the orders come from about once a week, according to owner Pete Longo. At first, I did not want to take it on, said Longo. I thought it was kind of dirty because of where it comes from. Basically, a cat's ass. He didn't say that. I did. The pricey coffee originated in Indonesia and the Philippines, where folks noticed that the civets eating coffee berries collected their droppings and picked out the beans. Coffee consultant Michael Peter, I kid you not, of Tamp Tamp Coffee Lab in New York said the cat's stomach acids produce a smoother tasting brew. How do you know that, Peter? Because somebody told you, some Indonesian told you that, huh? And he also said, I think it's unsanitary, but for New York, perfect. Westerners took note and began exporting the Kitty Poo Joe stateside in the last few years, like Westerners will do, because of its unique... You know, I'm going to tell you something. This is a true story. Well, I better not, because I don't have any idea who our sponsors. Do we have any beer sponsors? Look that, bud, before I tell the story.
Okay.
Westerners took note and began exporting the Kitty Poo Joe stateside in the last few months. The Daily News bought a quarter pound of the pre-digested Joe and offered some to city coffee drinkers alongside a sample of Ethiopia Michelle, a fruity-flavored coffee that goes for about $3.50 a cup. The Daily News obviously doing a comparison test. Peter, who had studied the coffee's origins but had never tasted it, blended 20 ounces and took a sip for the first time. It tastes earthy, musty. Yeah, I'll bet it tastes musty. We don't have any beer sponsors? Okay. I try to be partial, but when I think where it comes from, I can smell the feces, Peter said, because I got that kind of a mind. You know, I can't get it out of my mind. I can't get it out of my mind, he said. It's not that I don't like it. It's not that I would not want to have it. But when I think of it come out of a cat's butt, you know, I can't do anything. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. Yeah, we understand, Peter. Just go back inside, man, and count the bags of coffee, will you? Bob Lieberman, age 28, a coffee shop manager from Williamsburg, Brooklyn, was turned off after the first sip because Bob can't get that out of his mind either. It has a dirty taste. It tastes just like a cat's rear end. How do I know that? Don't ask, said Bob. Mona Shamali and her husband Ian Atkins, both 31 from Hell's Kitchen, proved their true coffee aficionados by sampling a mug. I definitely like the Kitty Poo coffee better, Shamali said, but then I am from Hell's Kitchen. Her husband, a real dumb Irishman, wasn't planning to shell... I'm just kidding, it doesn't say that. Her husband wasn't planning to shell out cash for it, though. I'll drink it free, Atkins said. With that price, I don't see adding cat poop coffee to my kitchen shelves anytime soon, he said with a chuckle, and then limped off. Well, there you go. So anyway, years ago, okay, I'm sitting down in Florida, and I'm down in Orlando, Florida. Now, believe it or not, in the early 1970s, in the early 70s and before, Coors Beer, not Coors Light, but the Coors Beer that comes in the sort of copper-colored can, was not sold east of the Rockies. You could not buy Coors in the eastern half of the United States. You could only buy it out here in California, the West. Now, like all things that are in short supply, naturally the rumor took and began to spread back east that Coors Beer, oh, baby, you got to have yourself a Coors. This stuff is something else, man. Oh, yeah. Really? What? It's Coors Beer. Oh, yeah, it's Coors. So when I left Florida to come back to California for a few months, what did everybody say to me? Phil, bring back some cases. Yeah, okay. Everybody, one thing you knew, if you were going back to California back in the early 70s from back east, you were going to go back to visit, you were going back to, you know, do whatever you're going to do, but you were coming back, you got to bring back cases of Coors. And friends would get off the plane with cases of Coors, and cats would get out of their cars with cases of Coors, right? And so in that period of time until they started selling Coors nationally, and you might want to look that one up, Bud, or Jace, when did they start selling Coors nationally? Coors was considered to be just the creme de la creme. Now, of course, today, with microbrews and with all of these different varieties of beer and ale and stout and we've really turned into a country of we're beginning to get sophisticated. I'm not saying that we're anywhere near the Europeans when it comes to our taste in beers other than lager. Lager, Americans know what they like. We like a cold lager beer. That's our thing. That was brought to us by the Germans in the 1840s. That's what we got to love. That's what took off. Before the German immigration of the 1840s and 1830s, America was like England. We drank stout, and we drank the porters, and we drank that kind of stuff. We drank that thick, stout crap, right? I say crap with all due respect. And that's what we drank, and we had public houses, and we had that kind of a setup. And gradually America, you know, changed. And one of the things that happened was the Germans came to Milwaukee and St. Louis, where they are to this day, and they set up their breweries. And there was an old man named Anheuser. Now, his daughter got married to a guy named Bush. But Anheuser was a printer. He wasn't in the brewery game. He was a guy that was in the printing business, I believe, or he had some kind of a manufacturing concern. And somebody owed him money, and the guy couldn't pay in cash, but he turned over a brewery that he had. And Anheuser, he didn't know anything about brewing beer, but he had this new son-in-law named Bush who did. Old man Anheuser was from Germany. His son-in-law was an American. And so the two of them put their noggins together, and the next thing you know, Bud Light. There you go, man. 100-some-odd years later, party animal. And the same thing happened in Milwaukee when the Schlitzes and all of those guys, the Labatts and the Blatts, all those guys went to Milwaukee. Plank Road, Milwaukee. Plank Road. That's the road, man. That's the brewery road in Milwaukee, and that's what our German immigrant friends did when they came to the States. And, of course, when World War II broke out, many of them went back to Germany to serve with the fatherland. I'm kidding.
Yeah, bitch, that's true, though.
Some of them, not all of them. Anyway, make a long story short. So everybody thought, Coors, man, you got to have Coors. Oh, yeah. So I'd come back with a Coors. I finally said to them, you know, I don't think Coors is any better than... You fake yourself in it. You think, oh, man, I haven't had a Coors in so long. And you come back to California, and I'd pop that first Coors, and I'd swear to God, I'm drinking just the most... the purest, most beautiful-tasting beer I've ever had in my life, right? But you suddenly realize that the attraction was not so much the taste or the flavor or the quality of the beer as that it was just rare and you didn't have it. And I look back on those days now. I'm not saying Coors is a bad beer. I don't drink it myself, but then I'm not a beer drinker anymore. I'm strictly a tequila drinker. But I would not say that Coors was so great that people would be pressing, hundreds of dollars into your hands, you know, as you were getting on the plane. You got to bring me back some Coors. And I'll get it for you, man. I mean, geez, oh, really. So that was where that was at. You know, Coors beer was supposed to be a beautiful thing. Now, I don't know whether or not Coors, I don't know when they started selling it nationally.
Well, yeah, I'd never heard about it not being sold no place else.
Do you drink that stuff?
I do.
You drink the, what do you drink, though?
I drink Silver Bullet.
Oh, God.
Yeah, see?
You drink it, too, man. I've seen you drink it.
You drink that crap, too?
Well, not like as much as he do.
Not as much as he do?
Man, you are dumb. Really dumb, man. I mean, you say you look at sea and you know you drink it.
I just don't drink as much as you do.
In 1939, Coors distributed in 10 Western states for the very first time. And then later on, they started selling that stuff nationally. But like I said to you, it became a... It was interesting, man. And I didn't know this until I left California as a kid and I began to live in other parts of the country. And the first place we moved to was Florida, and that was the first thing I heard was, oh, wow, you guys have Coors beer. Yeah, what about it? Well, the next time you come back, bring some, because we don't have it out here, and here's what we do drink. And what I was drinking down in Florida was, what the hell was I drinking? Dixie? Jack's? And my first taste of Old Milwaukee at 99 cents a sixer. Yeah!
Bitching!
99 cents for a six-pack of Old Milwaukee. In 1981, distribution began going to the eastern states. There you go. Okay, 877-876-PHIL, coming back with more. And we'll wrap up here. And don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. 1 in 5 Californians say they need mental health care. Believe that, man. Plus, your smartphone app is watching you. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico,
too, man.
Phil
Hendry. I'm watching in now.
Hold on for a minute. 877-876-PHIL, what?
He said that these people cut it off.
They did, man.
What are you guys watching, Heaven's Gate?
Yeah.
They did.
No, they did. Are you telling me all them people did?
All of those people castrated themselves, yes. He's watching the Heaven's Gate special on TV.
What? That's insanity, man. How... Well, you tell me that they cut it off and put on a purple suit.
They didn't put on a purple suit, man. They put on like a purple, like, what do you want to call it? I don't know, what do you call it?
A purple cloak or something, man. They cover themselves in purple.
What do you mean they're covering something purple? Did they cut it off themselves or they have another guy cut it off?
I don't know, man. I'm just telling you, these people at Heaven's Gate they castrated themselves.
Then they put on a purple suit.
But that doesn't look like a purple suit, man. That's a purple cape.
What are them shoes?
Nikes.
What, is that part of the religion for it to be Nike?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, I can't believe you never heard about it.
You're lying that they...
But we're not lying. These people were psycho, weird people. Okay? Do you understand? They were a cult, man.
Well, yeah, but when they put on a Nike in a purple outfit...
Well, they're weird asses, man. What do you want? What do you want me to say? They're freaking weird asses. These cats believed in some weird thing. They castrated themselves. They wore Nikes. Am I lying? Do you see that on TV?
Yeah, but he's telling me a bunch of stuff that's probably not true about it.
No, I swear to God, man. You listen to Phil. He's telling the same thing.
But I don't know what he told you.
He said that they put on a purple outfit and then they cut it off.
They did, man. That's exactly what they did.
Why? I don't understand why.
Bud, do you want to look in? You know what you should do, man? Look into the philosophy of all these cults, okay? Not a one of them makes any sense. They're all messed up. The people are all jacked up that join them. They're all a bunch of people that believe in, you know, like following Jim Jones, man. Remember when we were talking about that?
Yeah, well, that Jim Jones is out of his mind.
Well, no kidding, man. Well, all of these cats are out of their minds. You got to be out of your mind. And they follow these guys, like that one guy that you just saw there.
Yeah, what's his name?
His name's like something like, what was it, Robert?
Like Johnny Appleseed or Applegate or something like that.
Okay, now I know you're lying.
No, it wasn't like Johnny Appleseed. It was Applegate, right?
Yeah.
His name is Applegate. And anyway, they castrated themselves. They put on those Nike shoes. They wore those stupid-ass costumes. They shaved their head off. And they covered themselves in purple. And they committed suicide. And did you tell them about Hale Bopp?
Yeah, that's a part. If you're going to tell me that a man going to get on a comet and fly away, Brother, you better go knocking on someone else's door.
I'm only telling you what I already know about it.
They did, man. They believed that they could get on Hale-Bopp and fly off into wherever the hell, right?
How are you going to do that if you're going to cast, if you take it off?
What? What do you mean, how are you going to do that?
Well, I mean, if you're going to die.
I don't know, bud. Do you understand? I don't know. Do you understand that you have to be seriously emotionally disturbed? That you have to be damaged? You don't necessarily have to be crazy. But you've got to be damaged, man. You've got to be mentally damaged to be a part of any of this falderall, any of this jazz. To join up with Jim Jones, to join up with this jackass, to join up with any of these people, you have to be a damaged human being. So they castrated themselves, they put on Nikes, they,
Look at that, man.
Yeah, I'll put it.
You quit looking at her breasts, okay? You listen to me or not?
Yeah, but it's just the lady from the bear pit.
Yeah, I know, the lady from the bear pit. So they cut off their, wow, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, so they cut off their, you know, and they put on their Nikes, and they put on their purple capes, and they committed suicide, and they thought that by committing suicide, they would be able to fly off on Hale-Bopp the Comet. Now, don't ask me whether it makes sense. Don't ask me why they think that way. I don't know. But they're damaged human beings, and hey, maybe they think they're more highly evolved than the rest of us, and maybe they are. Maybe they are.
Are you? Oh, yeah, right. So you think they're better than you are?
I don't know, bud. I know they don't belong here. I know that we've constructed a society that goes just a certain way, and we kind of go this way. And cats that want to castrate themselves and wear purple suits and fly off on Hale-Bopp, they're going it this way. And everybody else is going that way. So those cats that are going that way, man, are definitely going the wrong way. That's the only thing I can tell you.
Well, look at it, man. That's the craziest thing that I ever heard. And look at that guy's bald-headed, too.
That's another bald-headed guy. That freak is probably a part of their group. All of them are just, like, gone, man. All right. State Fair Food Hall of Shame. Walking the midway of a fair or carnival is meant to be a fun family event, but nutritionally speaking, it's more of a haunted house. When the menu options include things like deep-fried candy bars, cheese on a stick, and cotton candy, it shouldn't come as a surprise that a day at the fair can quickly turn into a healthy eater's nightmare. Here are some of the unhealthiest fair foods going. Deep-fried candy bars. Wow. Fairs have a tendency to take something that's already too sweet, deep fried, and add sugar on it. Does a Snickers bar with nearly 29 grams of sugar really need more sugar sprinkled on top? According to the Consumerist, one of these has around 700 calories. And why does that sound good?
It sounds pretty good to me.
A deep fried Snickers bar. It does. It sounds good. Giant turkey legs. Turkey is a healthy way to get your protein fix, but when it's deep fried and served with skin in a humongous portion, it's not doing you any favors. In fact, just one is estimated to have more than 1,100 calories. That's equivalent to 5 corn dogs. A giant turkey leg. Deep-fried butter. Oh, please. What kind of a pig have you got to be, man?
Well, what do you do with it?
I guess it's fat, it's dipped in dough, and it's fried in fat. There's no official calorie count on this one, but keep in mind that before it's battered and deep fried, a stick of butter has about 800 calories and 88 grams of fat. What the hell do you do with a deep fried stick of butter? Deep fried macaroni and cheese. Mac and cheese is a once in a while treat as is. Fry it in fat, it becomes a once in a lifetime, but preferably never kind of treat. With an estimated 610 calories, it's not the most fattening food on the list, but it's still one to avoid. Spam curds. Oh, here we go. A hit at the Minnesota State Fair. Why did I know? Spam curds are basically Spam and cheese nuggets that are deep fried. Oh, and they're topped off with a ranch sauce, as if you needed it. I'm hungry now.
Oh, man, I'm going to throw up.
Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, and, of course, our screener and associate producer Dan Northcraft. Later and greater, philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry.